From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Man Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Man Cometh.
All right. BorderCon 2015 is over. We're all tired. Some of us are sick.
Yeah.
Everyone hates each other. We don't want to look at another game. And yet here we are. Once again, talking tabletop games on Edge Radio.
Which working hard.
Trent, Mark and Garth with the Dice Men Cometh. Oh, I'm tired. You guys do this.
Hang on. Ah, the sound of BorderCon, Mark. Sorry, everyone. So tonight we're going to talk about BorderCon. We're going to talk about games. We talk about games we played at BorderCon and some BorderCon stuff. I think that's it, isn't it? BorderCon. Some Kickstarters we played at BorderCon.
Yep. Some stuff we played before we got to BorderCon at Games Lab at BorderCon.
Oh, look, in all seriousness, we have had a fantastic
time
away last week at our favourite little convention in Albury, and we'll tell you all about it over the course of today's show, which begins with Mastodon and the sound of blood and thunder. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is the Dice Men Cometh. Trent, Mark and Garth are back. We've had a week off at BorderCon 2015. We are a little bit worse for wear, but we're kicking things into the right gear with Mastodon, Blood and Thunder.
Absolutely. And of course, we got there. We were super keen. We were going to do some recording and some interviews and all this sort of stuff.
We had everything prepared.
Did we ever?
Oh, we were so on fire. Brand new microphone and all this. And then the games got in the way.
They happened, didn't they?
We just played so many games, but what we did record sounds a bit like this.
All right, this is BorderCon Road Trip Take 1. I think this microphone is working. Trent Swindell's reporting in from an unspecified location in the middle of Melbourne. It's about 11:30 at night. No one's having any fun at all. Mark, how you going?
I'm feeling like crap.
Yeah.
Not having fun.
No. Our night at the Games Lab, where we were besieged by fans, I think it's fair to say.
Nothing. The correct tense is fan.
No, thanks to Al for coming out. Mm. That was nice of him.
Can
you have a one-person besiege, Garth is asking. Mark, the answer?
Clearly we did.
Okay. And he had us playing... Well, actually, I'm hardly the man to say what the name of the game was that you guys played. I believe that honour does belong to one Mark Rickards.
El Luchador Fantastico Grande.
And Al was taking us through the horrors of dealing with printing and distribution in mainland China when you've got to do the whole thing over Skype. And suffice to say that it's not for the weak-hearted. Nor is BorderCon, and we head up there tomorrow, but we've still got some hours left. Garth, good evening.
Hello, Trent. How are you?
Mm-hmm. Fine. What are you doing with yourself?
I'm punching a game that we have, that we haven't had a chance to play yet, but I thought we should figure out the rules before approaching this at BorderCon, because this game looks like it should be a bit of fun.
This is, we're playtesting this, aren't we? This is pre-production... Demo only release.
Kickstarter preview
mm-hmm. of Monstrous by who's the gentleman who sent us this?
Kim, is it?
Kim from Monstrous Games.
Kim from Good Games Publishing and Secret Base Games.
Secret Base Games, yes.
Yes. Okay. So we are right now opening the game as we speak.
And we're actually going to interview him in a couple of weeks.
All right. We've dragged along for our sins, Benjamin. How's your weekend so far?
Well, I finished it off. It started at 2 when I left work, so it's all up from here, really.
Okay, all right. Sounding hopeful, that's nice.
Well, it's better than work.
Yep, and that's what we always say here at the Dice Men Cometh. It's better than work. So this is the sound of our room in Albury. It's been a long drive, 57 hours it took, and we have arrived... And I've just been treated to the sight of Mark changing his underpants. How'd that work out for you, mate?
Well, I've got to make sure I've got the freshest pair available because if I forget a few take-backsies, they might be coming out later on.
That's right, and it could be a long night for the first night of BorderCon. Our first night in its brand new location, but we're staying up the road in the old stomping ground of the Hume Inn. Good to see that this place hasn't changed. since 1983.
It's up to its usual high standards.
Garth, this is, of course, your first year at BorderCon. What are you most looking forward to? What are you imagining? What are you fearing? What are you anticipating?
Well, by all accounts, I need to be concerned about hygiene. So I've taken some extra deodorant. Apart from that, I'm looking forward to playing a few games. New ones, old ones, fat ones, skinny ones. And let's get it going.
Friday night fatigue after night one of BorderCon in its brand new location. I think it's fair to say that the Best Western Hotel is a far superior venue to the Hume Inn. Well lit, well ventilated. That's always important when you get a bunch of stinky geeks in a room together. And bloody good food as well. And look, a couple of games ticked off our list already, Mark.
Absolutely. Elysium hit the table already. It's fantastic.
Isn't it?
I was just ready to play it again. If we didn't have to rush off to dinner, would have definitely hit the table again. And then now just two games of Mysterium, which is another one on the list of real unknown. I didn't know what to expect, but I had heaps of fun.
Yeah, I found Mysterium very frustrating. Frankly, I wasn't...
Yeah, see, I guess I really enjoyed Dixit, and it has that same sort of etheric quality to it, where, you know, it's using different parts of your brain.
Etheric. Is it etheric a word?
Etheric, yeah.
Is it?
Oh, from the ether.
Etheric.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, using the different parts of your brain, the right brain, the artistic, the lateral thinking, as opposed to the, maybe I've got the sides wrong, the left brain, you know, the mathematical, the analytical. So, good to be able to use both sides of the brain today.
I think it's far too late for you to be pretending to sound this clever, frankly. The other thing that's going on is that we're playing the meta game now.
Pretense, yes.
So this is a game that you play for the length of a con, where everybody gets one card which assigns them a role, and when any other player who's playing the game sort of exhibits a particular kind of behaviour around that role, you can name them up and steal their role card off them, and that becomes points for you. Now, who's your role, Mark?
I'm not going to say, because I'm still in the game, Trent, unlike you.
No, excuse me, I've managed to take Cameron's card.
Oh,
so
really?
I am in the game.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. So one up on you.
Nothing for equal.
Get back in your... Oh, whose card have you taken?
No one's.
So we're not equal at all.
Okay, so you're one up.
Yeah, all right.
Okay,
is
fair
that,
enough.
Is that so hard to admit?
No.
Or are we sharing this room together?
Here we are.
Without arguing?
Yes.
We've been arguing quite a bit this weekend.
Well, when two friends are so close and spend such time in intimate company like we do,
right,
it's bound to happen, okay?
Okay, fine.
Right, let's talk about it later.
It's been a good day, good night.
Bye.
Saturday morning of BorderCon. This is Garth, Trent and Mark from the Dice Men Cometh. Mark, how's day one been? You excited about day two? But before we get to that, how'd you sleep last night?
Did I tell you, I was having these weird dreams in the last hotel, and it was sort of, I kept dreaming that every time I fell asleep, someone would yell, Mark! And I'd wake up. And I just couldn't work out what was going on. And it happened about three or four times. And then finally I opened my eyes and there was someone looming over the top of me with a pillow in hand about to strike me.
Oh no!
And of course I told him where to go and, you know, defended my...
Well, not just that. You had the nerve to blame everyone else in the room for snoring.
Well, look, I was half... Half awake, half asleep. You know,
can't sleep because all you bastards are snoring.
I didn't really know what was going on. All I knew
Hot meat kettle.
There was this hulking figure looming over the top of me, pillow in hand, poised to strike.
Now, I've done a bit of psychological analysis over the years, and I'm pretty sure that what we've got here is a textbook definition of an abusive relationship.
Well, you know, you even offered to buy me breakfast to make up for it.
Case closed.
All right, that's enough of that. That was the sound of after hours at BorderCon 2015 with the Dice Men Cometh Should we just put all that stuff behind us?
I think we should. Although one thing I do want to mention...
Oh, okay, fine. By all means, let's put it behind us as long as I can get the last bloody
exactly.
word in.
No, nothing to do with any of that nonsense. We talked there about Monstrous, about it was how it was going to Kickstarter, and we had a copy of it at the con. It did go live. It's been live now for 2 days, and they've already met 65% of their funding goal. So they're after, I think it's 16,500. They're already up around, I think it's almost 11,000 with 28 days still to go. So clearly that's going to fund. Look, we had a lot of fun with it. It was liked by young and old alike. And I think that Kickstarter campaign is going to go really well.
And it looks beautiful. The art is fantastic
game. I think it's a great example of a Kickstarter campaign that's been well thought out, well managed. The game itself, they've, you know, ticked off every box in terms of graphic design and art and gameplay. A really great example of how to do a Kickstarter campaign, I think. So congratulations to Kim and the team from Secret Base Games. And that's definitely one you should check out, Monstrous.
We're going to talk more about some of our favourite gaming experiences, some brand new stuff that we got our hands on to play at BorderCon 2015 right after this on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
That was Half Truth by Invisible Boy, and I thought that I did want nothing but you. But after BorderCon, I don't want to see you again anymore. Especially you and your underpants, Mark. Now let's talk about the games we played. And Trent, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, look, a big one that none of us had time or chance to encounter previously, and that is Imperial Settlers, which came out last year.
Yep.
From Portal Games, Ignacy Trevicek's company, a Polish designer who's certainly made waves over the past couple of years, and Imperial Settlers has been a big hit for him and for his company. I like the little sort of tagline on the box cover. It's a card game with civilizations to care about. I actually think that's fairly accurate, because every card in the game does a little bit of something. It's very cute, very detailed art. We've got tiny little cute settlers doing little activities on each card. It reminds me of like a Where's Wally or an Asterix cartoon or something like that. You've got four different factions: barbarians, Egyptians, Romans, and the Japanese. They've each got their own deck of 30 cards, and there's a common card deck that people can draw from as well. You start the game with a cardboard bookmark thing, which lays out all your actions and the procedures that you have to follow. So it's all there for you visually. It's a good bit of design. And you basically build a tableau of cards around this stick of cardboard. You produce resources, you play cards, or you burn some cards to, or raise them, I believe is the terminology. Raise the cards for more resources. So some shades of Race for the Galaxy in there, I thought. Main strategy in the game, at least for a beginner, seems to be cycling as many cards through your deck or through your hand as you possibly can. So you can draw from your own faction deck and from the common deck. And the resources themselves are really nice. Little wooden meeples and wood and stone and little wooden apples as well.
Yes, they were beautiful.
Yep, they're the cost for various actions. There's a little bit of card drafting to do, which reduces some of the randomness in the setup. You produce resources, you spend them to play cards, which you can do, as I said, all sorts of things. It plays 1 to 4, but I think, from all accounts, this really shines as a two-player game. That seems to be... It won some award as a two-player game over the past year. It's just 5 rounds long. Each round gets increasingly longer because you've got more cards out on the table, and so there are more effects to account for. And you're basically just trying to build as many buildings as possible. That really seemed to be what it came down to.
Yeah, it certainly did, and I really liked the art as well. I liked the tableau building as well. I thought that was really, really cool. What you haven't touched on is the fact that you can mess up your fellow players.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to say thanks to Mark for starting that by destroying my beautiful barbarian gold mine or something, which was going to get me 3 gold coins every round. And then it got raised, and it was now just a foundation that I turned into an apple farm or something, so not quite as glamorous as it should have been.
Yeah, I did like that interaction between players. I think it would be best with 3, because you do that of interaction between your neighbours. And I really enjoyed that you could actually it wasn't really attacking, but it was, I guess, depriving them of a particular building.
Yeah.
You then got resources from that. So did they, in fact.
And there's all sorts of special effects that...
There is, yeah.
I was playing the Egyptians, and I had one little card who was the Scorpion Keeper, who was able to sabotage one of your cards.
Kept stinging me, yeah.
Basically make it my own, in a sense. So, yeah, little things like that.
And look, I did read Trent, and, you know, maybe I should give you some kudos, that beginner players should definitely stick to the Romans and the barbarians because the Egyptians and the Japanese are harder to play.
Apparently so,
maybe that's why you didn't do as well, perhaps, as others in the game, is that you did have one of the harder factions.
Here we go.
Of course, we should mention great friend of the show, Justin.
Well, the winner of our Five Tribes competition.
Winner of our Five Tribes competition, who taught this game to us. He was so gracious, such a great teacher. And then I beat him.
And how did you beat him, Mark?
I may have just completely destroyed his one building that had been piling resources up onto for the whole game and snatched the victory away right at the last minute. Hey, but it's part of the game.
Everyone loves a winner, don't they?
Do they ever? Look, I thought it was really cool. I think, yeah, three as well would be a great number. But I also think the table made a big difference because we were sitting at one of those massive round tables. Mm. And I couldn't physically see any of the cards that Justin, who was on the other end of the table, had, and he was my neighbour. So I found it really hard to go and interact with his cards and, you know, see what he's got and see what I could do.
Very small print.
Exactly right. So I think, you know, you need to be able to either see the little pictures on each one, because each picture does differentiate what is a gold mine versus an apple thing versus a this and that.
Yeah, and look, one thing we didn't mention, this is a re-implementation of one of Ignace's earlier games, 51st State. And I know, Trent, you've actually just purchased that one.
Got it in the BorderCon math tray.
Yeah, so I'm really interested to see the difference between the two, because what I hear is a lot of people like the theme of 51st State, the sort of post-apocalyptic America, but the layout of the cards, the resources, the way it's all done in Imperial Settlers, I believe, you know, that's most people's favourite version now because of that.
Yeah, very streamlined. But it is, I think, a fresh theme. It's a very family-friendly theme as opposed to post-apocalyptic America.
Yeah.
It's very easy to teach and to learn. You've got variable faction powers, which is, I think, you know, just generally a good thing to have in a game. It's short, you know.
Definitely.
90 minutes for four players.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a big plus. Mm. I actually thought there wasn't a huge amount of interaction. I would have appreciated maybe a little bit more. I did find it a little repetitive, maybe. And in the end, I kind of went, maybe this is a bit dull.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. And I must say, it did give me one of my angry moments from BorderCon, which was the very last turn. Trent tried to screw you over, Mark, found out that he couldn't, and he wanders over to me, and I've got two little meeples left, and I was a barbarian, so I had bugger all resources, but geez, did I know how to breed. I had a lot of people. And I'd save these two people up for my final turn. He plays whatever that silly token was that allows you to play my cards as if they're yours, screws my last turn over, very close to flipping the table.
I just found that there were a lot of things you can do in the game, but everything turns out to be kind of just okay.
I needed those two points.
Do you know what I mean?
You were
losing anyway.
I lost big time, but I was very angry at those 2 points not being mine.
And as you say, I wanted to target Mark. I couldn't. You should at least take some comfort in knowing that you're the second in line.
Wow.
Look, I think from a few repeat plays, you'd really get the hang of the different cards. Because as you were saying, we only probably got through maybe half the way through our own decks. And, you know, look, I'd like to see how the Japanese play. I'd like to see how the other factions play. There's an expansion with Atlanteans, which is really interesting because at the end of it, all your buildings sink into the dirt. So you don't get any victory points at the end of the game. You've got to do it through the game. There's another expansion called
Why Can't We Be Friends?
That's right. And it adds extra cards to each of the decks. So, look, I would really be happy to play this one again. I was very tempted to buy it myself. I think it wasn't available there. I can't wait to try 51st State and see the difference.
I find myself in the strange position of actually recommending this game because I do think it's a very, very good implementation of these mechanics and it's a great little theme, but I don't love it. That's me.
There you go.
Fair enough.
Garth?
Yeah, I agree. I think it was really good fun. I would love to play it again and again and again. I think it needs to be on the right size table for it to have that, you know, check out what my neighbours are doing, screw that one over, agree with that one, raise that building, blah, blah, blah. And I think it would be a lot of a better game if we were a little bit more closer together.
More games from BorderCon 2015 coming up on Edge Radio. 99.3 FM. The sound of architecture in Helsinki on Edge Radio. 99.3 FM. This is the Dice Men Cometh, and the sound of three large sick men.
Unhealthy?
No, you're doing all right, aren't you?
Young, healthy, virile, all of those things.
You didn't have someone cough in your eye on the plane.
No, but I was about a metre or two away from Mark for every night, whereas at least you were able to be in a different room. And I only had to have one pillow on top of my head.
Mm.
Anyway, speaking of that, I think that architecture in Helsinki would be a really great theme for a Euro game, don't you?
How so? How would that work?
I don't know. It just sounds fascinating.
Interesting.
Anyway, speaking of fascinating games...
And listen, we just want to send out a little cheerio to Richard because we know he's listening at the moment and we know that he's feeling unwell.
Yeah, right? Get well soon, Richard.
Because of the BorderCon fug that went around.
That's right.
Now, another brilliant game that we played at BorderCon, probably the number one on my list before we went.
And the first game we were able to play.
That's exactly
right. Which is amazing.
Right. Yep, and thank you so much to Rachel, who doesn't listen to this show, so I don't know why I'm calling out, but she did teach us this game. I think she was the only person there that had a copy, actually, and it was in constant rotation throughout the weekend. That game, of course, Elysium by Matt Dunstan and Brett Gilbert. Matt Dunstan, friend of the show, Aussie, now living in the UK. Put out by the company Space Cowboys, and I think in US it's published by Asmodee. Now, for those who haven't heard of Space Cowboys before, their first game, I believe, or at least their first game of note, was Splendor.
Yeah.
So they've got some runs on the board there, and I tell you what, with this one, they are going to be hitting it out of the park, because this is a cracker.
That it is.
I absolutely loved it. I played it once on the first night, and I played it again on the second day. I think it was my first game of the second morning. Loved absolutely both of them, not just because I won them both. I had a lot of fun this game.
He
just has
to get that in there, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. So this is the game of writing Greek legends. So you're dealing with decks of cards, which are around each sort of, if you like, house of gods. So you've got a set for Zeus.
Hades.
I always get the Roman and the Greek gods mixed up. Anyway, you've got a set for each set of gods. So there's eight sets, but you only put five of them in each game. So it gives a lot of replayability. In fact, that makes 56 different combinations.
Wow.
So
Calculon.
Heaps of replayability in this. And they all the decks play a little bit differently. So some cards use the Oracle, where you get to see some of the cards that are coming, and it gives you an additional set of cards to pick from. Some cards, which I didn't play with, the Military expansion, does a whole bunch of even extra victory points on the military points side. But you are... you are drafting cards, you're putting them into your... you take them from the Agora, which is the marketplace.
Into your domain?
You're putting them into your domain, which is above your cardboard strip, where you store your victory points, your coins, and your columns. And then your eventual goal is to move the cards from above the strip to below the strip, where you're writing the legends into your Elysium.
This is one thing I find very annoying in these games, where these are just spaces on the table. Netrunner does the same thing, like fancy names for your deck and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, look, they're thematic. But the interesting thing about that, the fascinating and amazing thing about that...
Damn it!
Hashtag interesting, not interesting, is... that above the strip in your domain, the card powers, for most cases, the card powers are active. And so you get to use the special abilities of the game, of the cards. But you don't score anything, or some cards that you score above the game. There are rule breakers. But to score, you need to bring them down into your Elysium, where their powers are no longer active. Mm-hmm. So you've got that dynamic tension of, I've got this really great card combo sitting up here, and whenever I do something, it's going to give me points, give me money. But in order to score at the end of the game, I've got to get them down to the bottom part. And you are limited by how many cards you can bring down each time. And you each turn, you're taking three cards and one adventure. And the four adventures are effectively the player order for the next turn. Adventure quest. Yeah, all the same thing. It's eventually the turn order for the next game. But it also, each different quest had a different amount of victory points, coins, and cards that you could transfer. I don't know if that was the correct terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, down into your Elysium. So if you went first in the turn, you'd get more money, more victory points, but less transfers. And so there was that dynamic tension of, I really need to transfer some cards this time. I'm going to have to go number three or number four in the play, in the turn order. But then, you know, you have to be able to have the columns, which was sort of like the money mechanism. So you were spending these different coloured columns, four different coloured columns. I'm not doing well with my enunciation tonight. Damn you, nose, mouth and throat.
Well, there is almost a Splendor-like quality to that in that you've got to spend the right combination of columns to be able to get the card that you want.
For me, this game, more than any other game, reminded me of Seven Wonders. But really, I suppose that's just a semantic thing because mechanically, they're completely different.
Yeah, I think from an art perspective, certainly.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I agree. But I think in this case, I don't know whether the theme is a big deal. I think it's just the mechanic of the game is really, really cool. I think it works, but I don't think it is, you know, what the game is about for me.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't. It didn't put me off.
No.
And I think, you know, because it's talking about these deeds from these heroes and gods being written into legend, and the writing part is when you move them down into Elysium. And the fact that then they're, because they use stones back in those days, you know, it's written in stone, so once it's down there, you can't change anything.
Yeah.
So I thought it fitted thematically with what you were doing. Obviously, you know, the card combinations are endless, and even just playing two games, seeing some of the combos start to emerge. Look, I would love to play this game again and again and again, and clearly there's plenty of opportunities for expansions,
absolutely,
new decks of cards.
I mean, this and Imperial Settlers as well. Just new factions, new families of gods. They're onto an absolute winner, this one, Space Cowboys.
But what I liked, I mean, Rachel was obviously a fantastic teacher. She had her spiel down to a fine art. Mm. She knew exactly how to do this. But
thanks, Rach.
Yeah, but I thought when we sat down and played it, after one round, all of us were relatively comfortable with how it worked. We knew this is what our columns were able to do. This is, we needed to have three cards, and then we need to have a quest card to determine turn order. And it worked really simply.
Yeah, look, I think this is a brilliant example of a game that is not complicated in mechanics, simple to teach, simple to learn, but, you know, a lifetime to master because the strategic depth is in putting all those different cards together. I absolutely loved it. I would have to say it was my favourite game of the con.
No, I think we're all agreed on this one.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. A 5-hour game of Archipelago was pretty damn amazing, but in terms of games that I hadn't played before, yeah, it was certainly up there. It was great, and we were just so lucky to get it out on the table Friday afternoon.
And looking at what it is up against in the Kennerspiel Awards, if this doesn't win, I'm going to smash my head into this desk right live on radio because Witch's Brew, come on, and Orleans, a dry, themeless Euro. This has got to win for me.
All right, no. You heard it here first. I am writing this down.
Yep, can you just make a note of that and also just jump online while this next song's playing. We'll get the date that those are announced.
All righty, doing that now.
Fantastic. We got one more game from our experience at BorderCon 2015 that we want to talk about. That's Lewis and Clark, The Expedition, and we'll talk about it next on the Diceman Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
That was Zamuto with Hegemony. Now, Trent, I saw this list that you wrote on a scrap of paper in the wee hours of Friday morning. Which
list
was
of
your...
what? What?
Well, there was a couple
what are
of
you
lists.
Talking
but
about?
The only one I really want to talk about is the list of games that you were thinking about buying at BorderCon, but you wanted to play a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell us about one that you played and then possibly bought?
Went straight to the top of that list, Lewis and Clark The Expedition. That's correct. Lewis and Clark, if you're not familiar with your American history, they're America's answer to Burke and Wills, except they lived.
They were successful.
Yeah, and also they listened to the native indigenous population. Because I looked into this just very briefly, and though there are some points of contention, Lewis and Clark largely had peaceful encounters with the local and Native Americans as they were becoming the first Europeans to cross the North American continent. Obviously, their arrival didn't augur well for those people, but at the time, things went largely okay. The theme did initially put me off, particularly because when you're playing this game, Lewis and Clark, there are these little red American Indian meeples with little feathers that stick up out of their hair. It kind of made me cringe, but I enjoyed it so much it became an insta-buy for me. And for that, I've got to thank Aaron Lim from the Action Points podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we were just having a yak to him. He recommended this, taught it to us in no time flat, and made it a lot of fun. Lewis and Clark has got elements of racing as you compete to get across the continent, deck building as you're buying new cards to get into your hand, then just hand management as you work out the most efficient way of actually using your cards, and worker placement as well. In fact, it's almost too much. Almost.
Well, I know we had a conversation with Aaron about that. Was this game too tricky for its own good? Was it trying to do too much? And I must admit, at the start, the whole strength mechanic, if you like, where you had to play two cards, one face up and one face down, with the face one, the face down one indicating the strength by one, two, or three Native American meeples. But by the end of the game, I loved that mechanic, and I really enjoyed the tension again between, well, that's a really great card. I want to play it face up because it does a lot of stuff. But if I play it face down, it's really strong. It's going to give me a lot of strength.
I agree, and it also gave you heaps of options because between those two cards, you had a whole bunch of permutations, and then you could also do your one strength, your two strength, your three strength. You could use this killer card that might only be able to put a one strength below it, or you could use that killer card to provide three strength to something else and do the same thing three times and get it really far ahead.
So everyone starts with a hand of six members, a hand of six cards, which are members of their expedition. Every card has a special action, or it can be played for strength. You just play them in front of you until you run out, basically. You can also use those cards, as we were saying, to power the other special actions. And you can also use your Indian tokens, which can then also be used on the board to collect various resources and to do a few special actions. The resources go onto a little player board that you've got, which shows a series of boats. And basically, the more resources and Indians that you're carrying in your boats, the more cards in your hand, the slower you're going to go in the race across the continent. You'll actually need to move backwards with your scout before then bringing up your camp, which is a little counterintuitive.
Yeah, but I thought it's really, really cool, and I think it does lay really nicely with the theme in that you are bulky, you are taking time to pack up and unpack your camp. I thought it was really cool. Now, I was the only player at the table who didn't upgrade their expedition with extra ships. So I travelled deliberately, quite light.
Lean and mean.
Yeah, and I didn't win, but I came second, which was nice. But I thought that mechanic was really, really cool because it was also that press your luck.
Yes.
I want to keep going as far as I can without, breaking camp or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? But it's a risk because if you get too far and you've still got plenty of cards in your hand, all of those count as negative movement and you've got to go backwards. And that hurts.
Yeah, I found that really really enjoyable. Damn it.
Basically, what it comes down to when you're playing Lewis and Clark is you've got a small hand of cards and some Indian meeples, and you have to try and use all of these as efficiently as possible, with ideally no one left in your boats, no one left in your hand, and no resources left over in order to move as quickly as possible across the board. So it's a bit of a mashup of mechanics that does take a few moments to grasp, but it is a race, so it does play fairly quickly. 30 minutes per player is what they say, up to 5 players, but that's not recommended for noobs.
That's understandable.
Cap that at 4 if it's your first time playing. The designer is a guy called Cedric Chabosset. It's the first game he's ever had published.
Wow.
That's amazing.
It's a remarkable achievement in that sense. He's got another one coming out called Discoveries, which is a whole separate game, but again, it's called Discoveries, The Journals of Lewis and Clark.
Oh, wow.
So he obviously loves the theme.
Look, I'm not surprised in my research to find out that this was nominated for Best Board Game Artwork, Best Innovative Board Game, and the People's Choice, or the Meeple's Choice, as they call it on the Golden Geek Awards. It was also nominated for French Awards, the International Gamers Award, some other awards. It didn't win. I don't know if it won any of those awards, but it was nominated for a hell of a lot of awards in a whole bunch of different categories. I really enjoyed it. It was very fascinating and
You just can't do it.
I just can't say that word, can I?
No.
The way it mixed all those elements together, I found really intriguing. And did I mention that I won this game?
Yeah. Anyway, but I thought the board reminded me a bit like Stone Age, I guess, that kind of art style.
Yep.
But again, it made perfect sense. I love the fact that I had a card that allowed me to turn a buffalo into a canoe. I thought that somehow was thematic. The fact that you could turn a beaver, a bit of metal, and something else into a horse. I don't know. I'll just trust that that's factually correct.
I think you're meant to be trading.
Horse trading. Horse trading.
No, I'm turning that buffalo into a canoe.
And as far as it being sort of clever, I guess I liken this to a sort of like a Christopher Nolan movie where it's, you can clearly see that it's a bunch of different stuff just sticky taped together, but you love it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you'll forgive it its flaws.
Exactly right. And I really do like the fact that your size of expedition weighs you down. I just think that's such a really cool mechanic. Mm. And I think for about 95% of this game, it was a really close race.
Yes.
Lastly, I just want to say it was really clever how you'd go from having to take your canoes to going on your horses through the mountains and vice versa. And the fact that a game comes with extra little chips so you can mix up that combination so that you can, you know, put a mountain in the middle of the water, which I guess would signify a dry creek
mix
bed.
Mix it up for
replay.
Yeah,
or you can do some rapids or what have you. And I think that's going to add to heaps and heaps of replayability.
Lewis and Clark, the expedition, an unreserved thumbs up from all three Dice Men.
Definitely.
On Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. One more to talk about. Going off. Hypnotized on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Man Cometh talking tabletop games. Now, I told a lie when I said we were only going to talk about one more. We had another one left over that we wanted to talk about very, very quickly. Garth is going to tell us all about Mysterium. Mark, you wanted to get a quick cheerio in.
Yeah, so look, I just want to say a quick thank you to the guys at Table Tyrant Games, Aaron Spark and Dylan Shearer. Now, they also sent us a Kickstarter preview of their game Tavern Fame, the game of boasting and drinking in a tavern. And it comes out, I think, in Kickstarter in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
Now, because we had such a full schedule, we didn't get to it till the end of BorderCon. We had a bit of a play with it, and we also gave it a try on the plane. So it is a game that you can play in small numbers like that. So if you're into sitting around and drinking and boasting with your mates, this is one that is maybe worth a look. I think it's a week or so before that Kickstarter launches. So thanks to Table Tyrant Games for that one.
Yeah, it's great to see another game coming out of Australia,
isn't
it?
Absolutely.
Always.
Excellent. Now, let's talk about Mysterium, which was a massive hit over the last, 12 months? You know, this is a game by Portal Games, who is owned by one of your favourite designers, Trent Ignacio Trevicek.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. It's not designed by him. It's designed by Alexander Nevsky and Oleg Sidorenko. Sorry in advance for all of that. But this is a really cool game. It plays 2-7, which is a massive player range.
Ooh.
But it is an asymmetrical co-op where one player is the ghost or the spirit, and the remaining players are the psychics who are trying to go into this house, this area, and solve a crime. Now, it plays really, really simply. The easy way to describe it, which I'm sure everyone said, is Cluedo meets Dixit. Surely that's how you play it. All the ghost is doing is they are choosing a location, a item, and a character for each of the players, and they go down in a sort of a tableau face down on the table. The ghost will then draw some cards and hand out the card that they think is most relevant to psychic 1, 2, 3, or 4 to help them choose the item, the location, or the character. And that's all there is to it. It's played out over 7 nights or 7 rounds. Each player who is being a psychic needs to have completed their personal mystery at the end of these 7 nights. They need to have figured out the item, they need to have figured out the location, and they need to have figured out who it was, the character. And really, that's it. You're using the interpretation of the cards, because the art on these is, you know, that crazy Dixit-style art where if you look hard enough, you can pretty much read anything into it.
Yeah.
And it's a game that I think would, you know, reward a lot of replayability in the same groups, because you'd kind of read each other's, cards. But that kind of defeats the purpose for me, because you want it to be a little bit different. You want it to be a little bit of a guess every time. And I don't know. I thought it was great fun. We played it twice back to back. What did you guys think?
Yeah, look, I think you're right, Garth. You don't want to take the mystery out of Mysterium by making it, by playing it over and over again. And an interesting, damn it, a comment made by a friend of the show, Richard, who I hope he's enjoying his spa, is, you know, they're going to implement the Dixit game, the Dixit cards into their copy as well to give more variety in the play of the cards. Look, I really enjoy this one.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the elements in the card, and those cards have so many elements in terms of colour, in terms of texture, in terms of all the different tiny pieces. There's so much to look for, and in most cases, you could look at that card and you could pick something from the six cards you had to choose from.
Yeah,
that would fit
exactly.
And so it's obviously very much a challenge with the ghost or the spirit to get you to see something in there that you want, and then they could play multiple cards to try and show you the element that they were trying to get across. But you're limited by the cards that you draw.
Exactly right. And I found, because I struggled through the first game, as I think a couple of us did, the more cards you get given doesn't help at all. Yes. A lot of the time. It's that I've got this card that has a tin soldier on a bench next to a race car in a room with this, and then I've got a caterpillar climbing up a plinth. Okay.
Yes. I found this incredibly frustrating, and
yep,
you're absolutely right. More clues don't help. I think this is just a glorified Guess Who with Salvador Dali style art.
Well, you're still probably going to say that there hasn't been a mystery game done better than Cluedo, aren't you? That's normally what you say in this style of game.
Quite frankly, in terms of a detective game where you're trying to solve a murder, Cluedo's it. There is no game that's done it mechanically better than that.
Yeah, and I would really like to try those couple of Sherlock Holmes games, Consulting Detective.
Well,
And Witness.
And Witness. Mm. Because you're right, like, you didn't feel like you were solving a murder. You did feel like it was a puzzle that you were working on together as a bit of fun, an activity.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because we'd also played Concept earlier in the day or the weekend or what have you, which was a really short game. And again, we kind of described that as an activity, not a game. And I don't know, Mysterium, particularly the first game we played of it, felt a bit like that. Going to the second game, where we played a different rule set in the final round, where we sort of worked together a bit more, I really enjoyed that one. I thought that was a bit of a better finale to the way the game played.
I agree.
Where the second game is you keep the cards that you get right, and then at the end of the game, the spirit uses those cards to create one final tableau, and you've got to choose the right item, the right location, the right character from a bunch of random cards that they've drawn. I think it was really, really cool. But yeah, I don't know whether I'd go back and play this again and again, apart from to have a go being the spirit and see it from that side of the table.
Yeah, I definitely like to try that as well. Tajemnice Domostvo, or Mysterious Homestead, which is a literal translation. But look, I really enjoyed it. Thanks to Richard and Sarah for teaching it to us. Look, all four of these games we mentioned, I just love them all.
Five things we learnt at BorderCon 2015 to very quickly wrap up the show. One, it's great to see friends once or twice a year, and though you don't know people really, really well, in a way you kind of do when you sit around and play a game with them and just kind of drop your inhibitions a little bit. Two, clearly some people don't go to BorderCon for socialising.
Yep.
They go just to game.
Yep.
Three, while many gamers are fat, white and male, there are more and more people who are not one or any of those things, and that's great to see. Mm. Four, many gamers clearly love this show, which is very gratifying, but also many gamers hate it. And that's fine. And five, our Take Backsy cards were a big hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we had a lot of fun, and we want to thank everybody who made us feel very, very welcome at BorderCon 2015.
I just want to add to that list, the teachers of games were just amazing. You know, Rachel, Ian, Terry, Aaron, they all did such a wonderful
Justin.
Job for me, for Justin as well, and it just makes such a big difference because it's amazing how quickly this weekend disappears. Yeah. You know, we came in on the Saturday morning, someone yelled out, Archipelago long game, put your hands up, and it's 5 hours later and it's time to have afternoon tea. Where's the day gone? It was awesome.
All right, we'll catch you next week. It'll be back to regular programming for Edge Radio 99.3 FM and the Dice Men Cometh. See you then.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.